Hey everyone, this is John.
This is Wes.
This is Ryan.
And this is the Nintendo, the best damn Nintendo podcast on the internet. This is the mini show for the month of February 2017. So we're going to talk about any random games or topics that you guys want to bring up. I got a few games. Wes, you got a game?
Yeah, I have a game.
Ryan, you got a few games?
I got a few games.
Cool. So I want to just kick this off. Ryan, why don't you lead us off here?
You want me to start with one of mine?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll go with one that I know you played. SteamWorld Heist?
Yes. Yes, I have.
Yeah, so because one of the other games I want to talk about was part of this interesting Humble Bundle deal that they do now, where you actually subscribe. Just pay, I think it's like $12 a month. And then you just get a bunch of games.
Okay.
They just predetermined on their end. And one of them that I got is SteamWorld Heist. So I'm going to be playing the PC. I'm playing the PC version.
Mm.
You play on Wii, right?
Through DS.
No, DS, that's right. If anyone is doubting that this is a good game, it pretty much has perfect scores from every review source. If it's out of 10, it's either got a 9 or a 10 out of 10. People seem to love it, and I can understand why. This game is really, really cool. Just like general style of game, it's sort of a turn-based... remember like Worms Armageddon?
Yeah.
It's kind of like, think sort of like a Worms Armageddon in a steampunk world with guns.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Love it already.
It kind of has this like outer space tone, like Firefly with robots. A lot of people draw a comparison.
Yeah, it's very humorous because it's got that kind of Western bend to it too. They're supposed to be sort of like space cowboys and they're hunting resources. And it is. It's turn-based. It's, yeah, all on against a 2D wall, essentially you're playing. And yeah, you organize a team. They all have different traits. So of course there's snipers and shotgun types. There's explosives. You ricochet bullets, so there's this geometric fun that gets to happen in it.
Some of the weapons will have laser sights to make it easier to ricochet.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them's kind of like guesswork.
Nothing's more fun than geometry.
Mm, yeah. Indeed.
I mean, I do love billiards. It's just like a real-life thing. I love playing pool. So it's always nice when you get a bank shot. It's always nice when you ricochet it off two walls against a barrel and just blow up two guys at once. There's a lot of team-building stuff. Again, you get to organize a team. They all have different traits. So you do want snipers, you want essentially your infantry, you want the heavies, the heavy arms going into the front line, stuff like that.
And so one of the most useful characters I found was like the farm girl who will eventually get a skill. And they all level up. You have like a level cap of 10 and they learn different skills as you go. And one of the ones she picks up early on is when she kills a guy, she gets another turn to shoot.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, that's like a great, great feature because it also allows you to sort of taper and build your turn. Because, again, it is turn-based, so you kind of have to plan. So if you've got four guys in a room and three enemies, and how are you going to bring them all down if not one bullet's going to kill them? You need to, again, yeah, plan how you're going to get that second wind on a move by getting a kill. Yeah, it's really fun. It's super approachable. The other game I'm going to talk about is essentially doing the exact same thing as this, except it's so unapproachable in a weird way. I'll talk about that game later, but... In this case, yeah, this is just a blast of a game. It's so easy just to pick up and play, and each board will last you 10, 15 minutes. It's fun trying to be the completionist and yeah, building a cool team, just shooting robots. It's pretty cool.
Are you collecting hats?
Yes.
Nice.
I am collecting hats.
You think that's how difficult is it to collect hats?
No, you just find them.
You can get them by happenstance. You can try to intentionally shoot the hat off of an enemy robot. You're not doing any damage when you do that, but you get to pick up their hat.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, do the hats do anything special? Or
no,
they're just
no
different thing. Style?
It's cosmetic.
Cosmetic, yeah.
Well, then you have to. Just how it is.
If you really want to be the completionist, though, there is totally an angle for unlocking everything, completing everything, doing all that fun jazz.
Seymour High speedrun all hats collection.
Yeah. Could totally happen.
I don't want to watch somebody do that.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, do you have anything else you want to say about SteamWorld Heist?
No, that kind of wraps it up. I'm sure you talked about it a bunch already. So
yeah, I got a short one here as well.
We know about that, John.
Yeah. this is great.
Decking joke. Back penis.
What? Yeah, terrific joke. It's awesome. I mean, I talked a little bit before in a previous show about Advance Wars 2. I played a little bit more of that one. I don't really have too much else to say about it.
Other than that, it's fun.
Yeah, other than it's really good. I did hit a wall, though. I hit a wall going through the third continent, sort of the third mini-campaign in Yellow Comet. And I overcame it, and then I had some really good momentum going forward. And then I hit another wall again about, like, 6 or 7 missions later. So, you know, it's one of
those ones where you gotta, like, break down, like, walls... and the right timing to like get through supply lines and stuff like that? Or
no, there were a couple of missions like that. I can't quite recall the one that I got stuck on, but there are a lot of missions, and I talked about this before, where it's not just build this overwhelming force and go take over the other side of the map. There's a lot more missions where like you have this force that you start out with and figure out a way to either survive or hold off the enemy long enough for you to capture something or destroy a particular enemy or enemy building.
Yeah. And some of those missions I don't really like all that much, though, where it's like you gotta get the missile silos to just...
Yeah.
Weaken up a force that could just absolutely demolish you, and then you got to chip away, like where they've got a bunch of Neo tanks and you've got a couple heavy tanks and some artillery.
Yeah, and there are quite a few. There's one mission in particular where there's like this pond in the middle of a map, and you're playing as the green dudes and the red dudes, and the gray dudes are your enemies.
You gotta get like the helicopters or something. You gotta ferry infantry to the missiles.
No, it's more about like you start out with all these naval units in the middle, but those are your green dudes, and you can't really build much of anything else. You have a harbor and you have a few buildings, so if you wait a long time, you can build a ship. But your harbor is more useful for repairing your current ships. And you're using your ships to kind of like do chip damage to incoming enemies, but really you're just trying to build up your red dudes and sort of sneak around the back of their lines and capture a building or destroy a cannon or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I found that on a lot of these missions, I'm trying to like have this perfect strategy, like a Fire Emblem game where I'm trying to hang on to all these units. But Advanced Wars is a different setup. And as I got like more adjusted to the idea that I don't have to keep every unit I'm given,
mm-hmm.
I find myself having a bit more success with missions. And, you know, at the end you get graded on how well you do. And I'm thinking like
S on all of them.
My general thought was, well, you know, if I hang on to all these units and I play really efficiently, I'm going to get a higher rank. That's not always necessarily the case.
Yeah, I found the best way to do it, again, is timeliness. That's going to be the thing that really prevents you from doing it.
Yeah.
It's easy to play that way, where you don't lose a single unit, but it costs you a lot of time to play that way. I always found the best thing to do is, like, intentionally let them get fucking wrecked. Let them take a punch to the face as long as they don't outright die, and then you just merge them. I'm constantly merging units, letting things take hits, and infantry. The game doesn't really penalize you for getting your infantry getting crushed.
I love the map with infantry.
That's the other thing. Yeah, I mean,
if you don't have at least 20 infantry running around, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah, I mean, if they got a queen and two rooks on the board, and you've got 30 pawns, you're gonna win.
Yeah,
like it doesn't matter how much power they have, you're gonna eventually just overwhelm them with shit.
Mm-hmm. But I like a lot of these maps, like the one I was talking about before. There's all these different ways and you can approach it. But the best way to approach it is just to try to go for everything. Just to try to make them manage their units on all different fronts.
That's a good point, because it is kind of... I mean, it's ultimately AI. It's not like a real opponent that's going to be like... Going to know, like, I can just create a vanguard of strong shit and I can roll over my opponent. They're going to be like, oh, they're trying to take every single thing, so I'm going to have to split my army up perfectly to tackle every single thing. And then you kind of just divide and conquer that way. And I mean, that's a good way, because really, like, even if one front fails, the other two succeed and you've made progress.
There are times where, on certain maps, I will intentionally just throw infantry or weak shit up against one front to make sure, like, hey, you have to bring some forces over here to deal with me, as opposed to trying to manage every front as if I'm trying to win that front. Like, no, I'm not.
And bottlenecks. You can bottleneck so much stuff in the game where they kind of just get trapped.
Right, and you have, like, just a bunch of mechs and a couple of artillery or a couple of rockets behind it, and then you have that area managed and you go focus on other things. So I like that in this game, and I don't remember it happening too much in the first Advance Wars for GBA. You have that necessity to go after all these different objectives, and that's how you're going to be the most successful.
Yeah.
But yeah, not done with it yet. I think that, like, once you're through... Like, because you got, like, Red Star and Blue Moon and Horseshoes and Clovers and all that.
Who are your COs that you really like?
And
you just go through Lucky Charms.
Yeah. Because you got the four different nations. I'm in the fourth nation right now, but I think after that when you go to the Gray Nation.
The Red Blades.
Yeah, exactly. My favorite CO, I really like Eagle, because...
The double turn is really amazing.
Yeah.
That's
a game changer. That's, and we probably talked about this multiple times in Dual Strike for the DS. I like pairing up Eagle with Sammy, whose infantry, like, become super efficient with capturing buildings, or Andy, who does a repair. So You have Eagle first, you move all your units, you do your double CO power, you move all your units again, you switch to Andy, he repairs everything, then you move again.
Yeah.
And that's why they got rid of the double COs, because it just becomes an overwhelming...
Well, yeah, it becomes a game mechanic you have to build the entire game around. It's mm-hmm. like, when am I going to trigger this double move?
Right,
essentially.
Right.
I don't know.
And, you know, the CO powers in Advanced Wars 2, I mean, they're fairly powerful, but it's not going to be this total game changer. You still have to plan an efficient strategy... In order
unless
to.
You're Colin.
Well, yeah.
And everything's free. They don't even make him pay money for anything anymore. It's great.
And his antithesis is actually a guy I really like.
Kenji, right? The
yeah,
idea.
So like Kansei, yeah, Kenji, something like that. But yeah, his units cost more, but they're more effective in a
yeah,
fight.
Yeah, they're way stronger. But I don't know. I
just
I like
just go for quantity.
I like
yeah.
shoveling shit on the map and making them do
and
stuff.
There's nothing wrong with just going for quantity and...
You know you've played it right when you've maxed out the units you have. When the game's just telling you stop. Just stop.
But yeah, I mean,
it's already dead. Yeah, that game is so much fun. I like that game a lot.
I'm going to do one more short one, even though that went a little bit longer than I thought it was going to. I've been plugging away more Persona 3. I think I crossed like the 30-hour mark. I'm not sure how much I talked about this one the last time I talked about it, but I can see the skeleton... of a really good game. Like, one day they will build a really great game around this formula. They don't have it in Persona 3. I hear a lot of praise about Persona 4. And I actually own Persona 4, so one day I'll get to it. It's a lot of repetition, and you kind of have to allow yourself some variety. So I think I've actually found the rhythm at which you're supposed to play the game. So... If you're unfamiliar, there's this life simulation stuff. You're a student, you're going to school... And you have to manage your relationships with other people. You have to manage your friendships by spending time with your friends. You also have to manage your own personal growth by doing things like studying for your exams. You have three stats that you're trying to manage. You have your academics, you have your charm, kind of your capability with the ladies.
Ayo.
And you have your courage. And each of those things will affect your other interactions with the game. Increasing though, it's like on a 1-6 gauge. So the higher you get in that, the more actually interactions and friendships you get. Those friendships will affect your effectiveness in a fight because it will allow you to acquire stronger monsters and stronger magic abilities in a battle.
And you get a girlfriend.
And yeah, I think I'm getting close to being able to have a girlfriend. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm moving at a good pace because it maxes out at 6. The game runs from a calendar year. It starts in... March. The game started in March of 2009, and I believe it ends at the end of February 2010. So you get a whole calendar year to play the game, to woo the lady, to
well,
get to
does,
the top
how,
of the
tower. How does your wife feel when you call her the wrong name during sex?
Luckily for me, this is a very Japanese game. All the characters are Japanese
there
names.
There is a character with the same name as your wife.
But, yeah, so...
Like, oh, Min-Mei.
Yukari. I think that's one of the girls who I can woo. I can't ask her on a date yet because I haven't worked up my charm. Like all of my stats are basically at 4-6, and I'm in August. Mm-hmm. So I'm less than halfway through the game, and I'm already at, 60% stat growth. So I feel like I'm doing well there. The other half of the game, aside from, like, managing your personal life and your friendship, is actually going into this tower that's 260 floors tall and working your way up to the top. There are events within the game that like will gate you off, like, hey, you can't go past floor 80 until like this particular date because there is an event in the game that allows you to move past that.
260 floors tall.
Right.
There, that can't even be real. Like,
well, because it's magic. There's magic involved.
I have a friend that lives in a condo complex that's 25 stories, and that's 10 of those stacked on top of each other.
Right.
That's not real.
No, of course it's not.
No. How tall is the Statue of Empire State Building? How many floors?
You could have asked either one. I have no idea.
Yeah, I'm going to Google that.
Okay, well, you be our fact checker.
Floors? Look at
that
tallest building in the world.
The one in Dubai.
The one in Dubai is the tallest. So, yeah. How many floors... It's technically a mech as well. It's transformed into a fighting robot.
I don't see how this is going to matter. If Trump continues to be president, we're all going to be living in caves soon.
Oh my god. Yeah, Trump is fucking everything up.
Fuck that guy.
Oh, we're a damn tangent.
Anyway.
Save it for the mini show.
Video games are
our political podcast.
This is the mini show.
Oh, shit.
The Burj Khalifa
yeah.
is an architectural masterpiece staying at 828 meters
and 160 stories tall.
So this is 100 stories taller than that.
Yes, this is 100 stories taller than the world's tallest building.
All right, I wanted to keep this short, so I wasn't going to get into the stories.
So your legs are going to be jacked up if you have to take the stairs.
you have to take the stairs. Well, though, there are warp points. Once you hit a certain floor, you can then warp back to the beginning and warp back to that floor whenever you feel like it. There's a rhythm to exploring this thing, and I think I figured it out. Because you're gated off by narrative events, you basically have usually about 30 floors that you can explore within a calendar month of game time. I find that if I go on there and I try, and like at the halfway point of that, there's an exit point to where you can just leave and re-enter. So what I do is I enter this section of 30 floors, I work through about 15 floors, I leave, I go do some other stuff within the game, and then later on, I go back and do more. There are side quests that you can accept and do. So far, I haven't encountered any rewards that are really significant by doing these side quests, like kill this monster and harvest this many items off of it, that kind of thing. But I make an attempt at it. So really, I'm only entering this 260-floor tower 3, maybe 4 times within a calendar month. Otherwise, I'm trying to boost my own personal stats or work on these friendships, which afford me better skills in the battle. The battles themselves, I find myself frustrated at times because you don't have control over any party members except yourself. You can set general rules for your party members, like I want you to focus on healing and stat buffs, or I want you to focus on just wailing away at the enemy with your weapon.
So this is like an open area when you fight? Like here's a third person
perspective? No, third person perspective, but it is a traditional RPG, like a Final Fantasy, where you enter this sort of battle arena, and it's just, you know, a 3-on-3 or 4-on-4, where you're standing around the enemy, and you take turns, and you wail with your weapons. But the only time you're inputting commands is when you're using your main character. So what that leads me to do a lot of times, because this uses a Shin Megami Tensei battle system, where exploiting enemy weaknesses, elemental weaknesses such as fire, ice, and electricity, will afford you more turns or a greater advantage in battle. The most efficient way to end battles is to use the enemy weaknesses. So my main character does all the heavy lifting. Most of the times in any like battle that I come across, my main character is the only one doing actions because I'm like, okay, well, you're weak against this. I'm going to use these maneuvers and you're going to die. I got frustrated at certain points
when the battle's ended, the other ones take credit for it.
Yes, of course they do.
They're flipping their sword around.
Like, we're so awesome. That was a really easy battle. Yeah, because I did all the work. And see, and it's not like these other characters are useless. They have magic skills. They usually like align to one particular element fairly strictly. So there's one guy who's a boxer, and he also uses electric magic. And there's a girl who is a healer. She also uses a lot of wind magic. It's not like they wouldn't be useful. It's just I can't rely on them to use the spell that I would want them to use. If there are multiple enemies on the field that are weak to wind, the girl who uses wind magic might not necessarily use her wind spell that attacks all of them. She might use her wind spell that only attacks one of them, which, fucking thanks. Kill them all for me, thank you. So you can't really rely on any of them. And it becomes especially troublesome in a boss fight. Because I got into a boss fight and I had to bash my head against the wall against this boss like 3 times. Because basically, the Pokemon equivalent would like falling in love. So that has like an infatuation status affliction. The first 2 times I went up against this boss, right at the very end of the battle, when I just had very little health left, it cast this infatuation status ailment against my main character. So my main character can do nothing, and sometimes he would attack the party. Mm. I couldn't instruct any of my other characters to use a fucking healing item on me or anything. It was just like, no, we're just gonna do whatever we feel like, just be a bunch of morons and not kill this thing off. And it wasn't until like the 3rd time I fought the thing that I just lucked out and it was never able to land a infatuation spell on me. It tried, it sure as hell tried, but I just lucked out. And it's not like I didn't have a good strategy. I was like putting up resistances to the particular type of magic it would cast. I stocked up on like status healing items. It's just dumb luck.
Side note, have you ever played a game called Radiata?
Radiata no.
Stories?
No.
It's a Square Enix game that I remember playing. It was for PS2. Game's a blast, but it's, it kind of sounds similar to this, where it's party building. You control your one guy, but then like your objective is to recruit everybody else in town, and you have to do certain things to make them happy.
I've heard of this,
and you can pick sides. You can sort of recruit like these, like if you go for the ogre guys, you're probably not going to be able to get like the elf people.
Oh, interesting.
And it's sort of like party building. And again, you are basically just in control of your main dude, from what I remember. And you kind of just issue commands or general strategies for the others to be like, you're my designated healer. You attack anything that moves, that kind of stuff.
It kind of became a thing at the end of the PS2 because Final Fantasy XII.
Oh, yeah. Final Fantasy XII was the same way.
But and you can control by saying different paragons.
Yeah, you can, like, your gambits are whatever they're going to call it in that game.
I don't even know. Like, it's just stupid.
And well, it's a harsh contrast from the way RPGs used to be. And I don't know, maybe I wonder when World of Warcraft first started becoming a real big thing, because maybe it was like the MMO influence seeping into console RPGs. I
mean, it wouldn't have fixed Final Fantasy XII completely, but it would have made the game actually playable, in my opinion, if you could just control your other fucking teammates. I like the Paragon system. I like all the things they did with it. But you're sitting there like relying on your guys to do the right thing, but they're just fucking idiots.
Right, and you can try to nudge them to do the right thing. Like, hey, when this happens, cast a healing spell. But, you know, sometimes in the heat of a battle, you might want to adjust your strategy. And you don't want to have to intentionally lose to reset them and whatever.
Yeah.
You know? So sometimes luck just plays a huge factor, and you keep getting infatuated over and over again. And
fucking relying on RNG is a really annoying thing.
Yep. So, all right, why don't we kick it back over to you for one more, and then we'll take a break. Come back with Wes.
Sounds good.
Yeah!
All right, so the other game that I was going to talk about, which is like SteamWorld Heist, but totally not like SteamWorld Heist, is XCOM 2.
Now, I've seen a lot of pictures for this, and I've seen a lot of commercials and things like this for this game.
Yeah.
And I heard it got really good, because XCOM, like, didn't get great reviews, but at the same time, it had a big fan base.
I mean, I am a fan.
It was weird.
I am actually kind of an old school fan of the series, because I played a lot of a game that they had called Terror of the Deep, and then this one called XCOM Apocalypse, which may be one of my 10 favorite games of all time. Like, it's such a blast if you are, like, a spreadsheet dork that likes turn-based fighting, wherein the spreadsheet stuff happens in the city building element of it.
Oh, real quick, before you move on, Ryan, Ogre Battle 64 is available on the Wii U Virtual Console.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
No shit. That's awesome. Yeah,
just came out a few days ago.
Ooh. I'm asking
you. Anyway, go on.
Yeah, so XCOM 2. Yeah, like, so the XCOM series has been around for a long time, and that's really what they've gotten. That's what their pedigree is. This is the thing that they figured out how to do, is give you, at the same time, like, a Sim-style city-building thing, and then at the same, also give you turn-based, tactical, isometric fighting, where you again, build a squad, and you fight others, and, you know, this is a franchise that's been around for, like, 20 years, so they've had a ton of growing up that's taken place to get to XCOM 2. And the original XCOM was...
So this is not the second XCOM game.
This is the second of a relaunch. Sort of like Grand Theft Auto 3 is considered Grand Theft Auto 1.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
So
yeah, it totally changed the style of the game.
Yeah, like, and not to say Grand Theft Auto 1 and 2 were great games, but they're relics compared to what they're doing now. And I think what XCOM did is they realized that they tapped into something great with the XCOM series that they had in the 90s. And they tried to rebuild it and basically streamline the stuff that was confusing, like having to maintain relationships with corporations that build items in your game. Again, the game is beyond fucking deep. It's so deep. It is like, oh man, the original XCOM Apocalypse is a blast. Like, I would play modes where I went into total despot mode, where I just, the first thing I did was destroyed the entire city. And then, because once you do that, basically, all of the companies that you rely on to just do things, the taxi service in the city. And granted, all that happens is, like, the council kind of wags their finger at you and says, you really destroyed the city just then. Not good that you did that. We're taking your money. But then at the same time, you can just build all of the stuff you need yourself. It's sort of like, if you want to destroy the economy, you can. If you want to be the good Samaritan and prop up cities, and even, like, evil groups, the bad groups in the game, you can be like, I'm going to give you money. I'm going to give you money so you don't do bad things. And then they'll be like, okay. And they might still do a bad thing every once in a while. Or you can raid their buildings.
Do they just do nothing? Like that? Like, you're just basically paying them off to, like, not have crime?
Oh, God. It's protection money for the entire city.
Yeah. It means that they're not going to go into the slums and start murdering people. There's slums in the games. I mean, again, this is not even a game that I'm talking about.
Why would
they
murder people in the slums? That'll bore them? I mean, what?
They build up this thing that they're...
It's a typical Tuesday for these guys.
Why would they drop the plate on Midgar? You know, like, that's just what they
corporations do.
That's what they do.
All right. Well, no, there is a totally illogical reason for that, and that is because the reason why these guys are evil is because they're essentially organized gangs. And what do organized gangs love to do? Sell drugs. Who do they sell them to? People in slums. So the projects, they don't call them the slum. I think they actually do call them the slums. No, but it's like the people there are still good people, and you don't want them to die. But at the same time, if you go in there and you are 30 minutes into a fight and you know that there's one bad guy stuck in the building, you kind of just put the C4 around the building and level it, which is cool that you could do that. It's cool that you can destroy entire buildings. And then when the fight's over and you're leaving, there's like ash and rubble where this part of a building used to be on the town map. Like, oh, I mean, the game is great. And that's not even talking, there's aliens. There's fucking aliens trying to invade. I'm telling you everything about what it's like to have a city. Like, there's aliens that want to invade the Earth. And that's XCOM's formula.
And then you destroy all the cities, it'll be like, well, never mind. We're done here. Yeah. And then the Lins leave.
No, they're still going to come in. Okay. And you still got to fight them off. Again, keeping the town functioning and alive really isn't your purpose. You're sort of the defense force. You're there, and the grand scheme of the game, if you play any of these XCOM games, is that they show up, they are a lot stronger than you. But you take down their ships, you invade their ships, you take their technology, you research it yourself, and rebuild your own stuff. And then you build ships that can go through their portals to scout. And then you're like, now I can build human transport ships. And then you become the guerrilla invasion force to go through their tunnel to get to you, their wormhole to get to you, you start destroying their city.
So that's like the end game or the second half of the game where you become the invasion force.
Yeah, and the game continues after you beat it, but that is the last thing that you do, because you go in and you destroy all of their major buildings. So you destroy their slums, you destroy their helipads.
Can you start selling drugs to their citizens?
What you can do is there's this like psionic thing that happens, and even the new games maintained it. They realized it was a lot of fun. Now we can actually talk about a little about the combat. You would do this amazing shit where you would have these guys that had psionic powers, and you would basically like find like your opponent who's like ready to kick your ass or something. You could mind control him for a turn or for however long the mind control would last. You can go into that guy's inventory, trigger every single bomb he has for a half second delay, and make him run into his own team and blow everybody up. Let's kill his entire squad from one guy in mind control. One turn, essentially, of a guy mind controlling you could turn the tide of the battle to the point where it's just crazy. Like, and I would do it all the time. Like, you just basically turn them into a suicide bomber against their own squad. This is the kind of fun that you can have with the game at a really high level if you spend a lot of time playing it. And there is real time and there is turn taking time. And I'm going to talk about XCOM 2.
I
really haven't even talked about XCOM.
We haven't got to the main event here.
So XCOM 2 is a sequel, and XCOM was a relaunch of the original XCOM, again, trying to do the same things, where aliens have invaded now. And the first XCOM, aliens invade, you're trying to fight them off, you lose. Ultimately, that's the thing that happens, is you lose. The aliens win, and they sort of take over, and you're now in this dystopian world. XCOM 2 picks up, we are now leading the resistance force that's trying to take them out. It does a lot of the same stuff, where it's sort of like you have a globe, and you have regions, so it'll be like North America, South America, parts of Asia. You go to these areas, you link up comms, there's all sorts of gadgets and mechanics and things you gotta balance. You know, you've got intel that you need, you've got power for the ship to have things that build stuff. You recruit squads, you recruit scientists, you recruit engineers. It's daunting. My first playthrough, I was like, because especially from playing XCOM Apocalypse, where I know it inside and out, playing this for the first time, I was just terrified to do anything, because I was like, I know I'm doing something wrong. And there's real time burns in the game, and time is absolutely essential.
Oh, so time is like a resource.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you hit fast forward and you haven't set things up just pitch fucking perfect, you could ruin the game for yourself.
That's when time is a resource like that, it's a legit worry, that because people say a lot same thing about like Majora's Mask. Like, they get stressed out by it because you don't want to like miss doing something. You don't want to like continue to a point like, oh shit, I should have been doing something when I hadn't, other than what I have been doing.
Yeah. So when you get past the worrisome element of the game, which is still kind of heavy, if you're playing it for the first time, it's going to suck in that regard. You're always going to feel like you're not doing something right. But the combat part, you know very well whether or not you're doing something right, because it is brutal. You can really, really fuck yourself over quickly. Squads can die. And you have a very limited squad. It's like a Nuzlocke, essentially, where you got your squad, not only can they die, they can get what they call shaken. Meaning, if you take one, say he's got 10 hit points, he goes into a fight, and he loses 8 of his hit points. He survives the battle, good for him. He will be called shaken from then on. And that means that he basically will crumble in battle. Mm. He'll get into a fight, a bullet whizzes by, and he freaks out.
And do they ever get over that?
They can if you can get them through a fight, have them get a kill, and not take any more damage.
Mm.
Which is very, very tricky to do. And you don't want to bring a squad full of shaken people into a fight, or else it's going to backfire on you terribly.
Are like your characters randomly generated? Do they like to level up and progress?
This is the best part. You get to build them. You can build them however you want. I made a sniper that looks like... I called her Sarah Connors. Because looks like Sarah Connors. Like, with the bangs and the thing in the back with the aviator shades.
Uh-huh.
And she's got this awesome sniper. And that's the other thing. You got four or five different things you can be. You got...
I'd make the Breakfast Club.
Yeah. You could if you want.
Go into war against the aliens with the Breakfast Club.
People make character packs. The game was pre-built to be modded on Steam. They were big. The group behind XCOM, Firaxis made this game. They did a really smart thing, and they were like, let the mod community go nuts. And that's one of the things that happened, is people made Marvel character packs. People have made all sorts of crazy packs of characters. Like, I know, I mean, I basically in 5 seconds, like, not five, probably 2 or 3 minutes, built that Sarah Connor character, and she looks pitch perfect. You know? Like, you can build a squad to look like whatever you want to look like. You have all of these different character customizations, voices, color layouts, skins, tattoos, headbands, face masks, every way you want to customize.
How many do you get to build?
As many as you want.
Build
2,000 guys if you want.
Can you build them at any point throughout the game?
You can bring... I've done it before, too. I just bring in some character, and I'm like, he's a Russian guy. I want it to be a Irish woman. So I just rebuild the character, and it can do so in just a couple
of minutes. But you have a limited amount of characters you can...
It costs you money to get new characters, yes. Oh, okay. But the character pool of recruits, you could fill your team with, like, 30 characters if you felt so inclined. There is space. As with everything, this is a game about economy. There is space. So you can't go crazy and have 10 engineers and 1 scientist. You want to balance that out, right? So, and again, just to get back to the combat, I know I'm rambling here. I've been going on for a while. And the combat is really, really fun because it is, again, it's turn-based. You're on a big grid. You have objectives, like, go take down these 2 points. Your character's types are, like heavy arms. Oh, and you level with them. So if you're a squatty, you basically have 1 cool little ability. But then you get promoted to, like, a corporal, and then a sergeant, and then a... Like, there's, like, 10 different
ranks. When you level up, are there, like, stat distributions? Is that manual? Is it preset?
You pick an ability.
Okay.
So, say you are, for example, going to be the ranger class. Like, a ranger is sort of a scout, right? Like, they're going to go out. You can have it be that they basically maintain cover in certain scenarios. They have a big machete, so you can basically say, I want them to either be, like, really super stealthy, get around the map, and do things that they shouldn't be able to do, or do I want them to be, like, in Steam World Heist, where... they could go in, get a kill, and then take another turn off of that, go in and just slice somebody up with a machete. They feel so inclined. You know, and also traverse a ton of the map in doing so.
Right.
You know, you have snipers that provide insane range. Like, they can cover the entire map, essentially. If they've got... there is an ability that they can get at the higher levels where they have the sight of... they have this true sight of whatever their own squad can see. So, they could be completely out of range behind a building, but as long as your other guy can see them, they can get a pot shot off at them.
Hmm.
They also have pistols, so you can do, like, you can go in, quick fire a bunch of rounds, and then take your sniper rifle out. You know, you've got this, probably the most unique thing that they've done so far is introduce this stuff called, I don't know what you call them, they're specialists. They have technology, so you can hack things. If they have turrets on top of their buildings, you can hack the turrets and then make them shoot their own guys. You know, stuff like that. You don't have that same degree where you mind control and then trigger all your frag grenades and throw them at your allies. You know, you can't really, at least not that I've gotten to that point, you can do that, but I'm going to stop there and just say this is a great game. Again, this is one of those games that's getting reviewed like crazy. If this game retails for $50, I still think if you do that humble bundle, monthly humble bundle, and you can cancel it after you basically do it the first time, it's $12. You'll get XCOM, you'll get SteamWorld Heist, and you'll get like 5 other games. Well worth it.
Yeah. What do you do with that? It's a bundle.
Yeah, like you know how the Humble Bundle. You know how that works. Have you heard of Humble Bundle?
No.
They once
Humble Bundle is you basically pick how much you want to donate. There's like an entry level, and for the entry level, like let's say it's $8. For $8, you get
a penny if you
want. Oh, yeah, that's right. So
and you'll get like 3 games.
Yeah, if you donate anything, you get a couple games.
Yeah, you get a couple of really cheap games that are probably going to be freeware eventually. If you donate
like the average
greater than the average,
yeah,
then you get more games, and if you donate over $10, I think it is, or a certain threshold, then you get some even better games.
Yeah.
It's however you want to play this.
But basically, you're spending like $12-13 every time. You're getting like
seven.
This is a one-time thing. Just here's a donation.
It's a week. Here's some games. They do that once a week. And what I'm talking about is this monthly thing that they do now, where you just simply subscribe to it and you pay $12.
Oh.
And then every month, they're going to give you just a bunch of games, and they will be of a better quality than what you would get, say, for those penny games.
Mm. And you know, do you still get to select where your money is going? Because that was a thing, at least when they did the Nintendo ones. You're like, okay, so this percent of the money I want to go to the developers, this percent I want to go to the charity that they're supporting.
Yeah.
And then there's like a third tier, like this percent I want to give to basically the people who put together the Humble Bundles.
Well, when I did this, and I canceled it, actually, I only did it the one time because I really wanted this XCOM, and I saw that Steamworld Heist was available too, and I heard you rave about it, so I was like, I'm going to get that too. So I did this once, and then I just immediately canceled it.
Mm.
When I did it, the only thing I remember deciding was the charity that it went to.
Okay.
So beyond that, I don't know if they let you do like so much goes to developers.
Mm.
Firaxis, I'm guessing, does not need to be given any handouts from Humble Bundle. They're a fucking giant company. They're owned by 2K, the same guys that make Borderlands.
Oh, yeah.
And about a million other games.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's
Borderlands.
Yeah. Borderlands is awesome.
I've been hearing good things about the pre-sequel.
Oh, yeah?
I haven't played it yet. I haven't played it, but I've been hearing really good things about it. So I'm like,
That's great. Should we take a break?
Yes.
Sure.
Let's take a break and come back with Dishonored. Is that the one?
Yeah, the ongoing Dishonored.
Yes. Cool.
So I finally bought Dishonored.
Ooh.
Dishonored 2.
Mm.
And I played Dishonored 1.
I remember.
And I love the game.
We've been joking that it's called Dishonored 2, the ongoing Dishonoring.
And the funny
thing is the subtitle?
John believed us.
That, you know what? And I'm gonna explain. As someone who almost exclusively plays Nintendo games, I'm very used to things being named poorly. So it just seems like something that might happen.
Just the ongoing Dishonoring.
Mm-hmm.
God, it's so bad. So I played a lot of Dishonored 1, and I loved it. Never finished the DLC for it, which I'm gonna. But
sure.
I picked up Dishonored 2, and when I bought it, I was staring at it at the wall, and I goes, this is $37.99 used. And I was looking at the thing, and I was about to turn and walk to the counter, and then I noticed in the corner, also comes with Dishonored 1 game code or whatever fuck it says on it. So I was like, but this is a used one. So I put that down and I immediately grabbed the $39.99 and go, no, it was $34 and the actual new one was $39. It's like, I'll pay an extra $5 to get the code for Dishonored. And so I got that as well.
Did you have you didn't have Dishonored 1 on that system?
I have it on PS3.
Gotcha.
But this is the definitive edition for PS4.
Yeah,
so totally I have it. Now it's on one console. It came with all the DLC, which I was missing one of them anyways.
That's a total steal.
So I was like, fuck yeah, let's do this. And then I had a $30 Samsung Pay gift card. So I was like, all right. So I paid $12 for the game. It was awesome. It was fantastic.
Nice.
It was a great day.
Mm-hmm.
Dishonored 2 does some new things opposed to Dishonored 1. Now you have Saruman followed
Corvo. Okay, so this guy Harvey Smith, who is the main developer of this,
yeah.
His pedigree is fucking disgusting. Look at this guy. He made System Shock, Deus Ex, and both Dishonored games.
Yep.
Like, that's all very much of a similar thing.
Which, who cares about all of it? All I care about is the Dishonored.
Because yeah.
They're fantastic. Mm-hmm. It's out of my top 10 games, they're on there.
Yeah. And Bethesda.
They're just fantastic.
Or Bethesda published it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a Bethesda game, and it's not as glitchy as some of the other ones, so shut your mouth right now. I've only seen one glitch in Dishonored 2. One.
It's one too many.
And it really wasn't that big of a deal. It was like, it was a set NPC, they came in, you're supposed to hide from them, it was like this gang leader, mm-hmm. and then after they got talking to like the black market dealer, they like left, and as I exited the black market dealer, I noticed that, oh, they walked around this corner and like went into this building that you can't go into, so they kind of like, you know, left the game essentially, but the hired henchman glitched and he's just walking into the wall, like just standing there like
outrageous.
So it was a little awkward, but that's
game breaking. The
only glitch I came across with this game.
2 out of 10.
Well, from the original Dishonored, there was like a trick shots. Like, I mean, people just got into the habit of making trick shots videos.
Oh my God.
Where it was like showing off all of the crazy mechanics that really, really sharp players can do, where it's like launching a knife like fucking 200 yards in the air, fucking around with a bunch of people, positioning a guy here, and then like you knock out the one guy just to have a knife fall on.
Yeah, it's like, absolutely ridiculous what people can do with these things. I've ever watched the high chaos just kill montage. It's nuts.
Yeah.
And some of the things you can do in Dishonored 2 with some of the new powers are even just wackier.
Mm-hmm.
Now you can play the game. You get to choose between one of two different characters. Yeah, Corvo or Emily. And
so the setup for the first game, like I remember, like the intro, right? It's like some countess gets killed or something.
Yeah, the
and then
empress
the show up and are like, it's
"Yeah,
you,
the empress, you show up after going on this mission to find a cure for the plague." And then you're
the
meeting
cure is soap,
apparently. And then the empress gets murdered, and her daughter gets kidnapped, and you're blamed for it. And so you're going through and killing the people that are behind the conspiracy, saving Emily, the daughter, which
it's like
now
Count of Monte Cristo,
essentially.
Yeah.
And just things happen. And then the DLC follows, you play as Dodd, who is the assassin of the Empress.
Mm-hmm.
So you're kind of like going through his story, what happened to him afterwards and everything. And his story actually gets intermingled, and like the second DLC is him fighting the person who ends up the main villain in Dishonored 2.
Mm-hmm.
So, I didn't know this until playing Dishonored 2. I was like, I know I've seen that chick. And then, boom, she's on the cover for the Daw DLC. I was like, oh, that's why, because you fight her in that thing.
Mm-hmm.
So now I go back through and play that.
Mm-hmm.
But Emily's powers are very different from Corvo's. You can play through Corvo, which you get the same kind of abilities and everything as you did in Dishonored 1. The same blink, the freeze time, the possession, the summon rats. And then Emily's powers are a little bit more diverse, because Corvo would have these set abilities where some of those abilities, their only purpose is just to murder. Like, you can't do anything other than murder with summoning a horde of rats. They're just going to eat
But
people.
Can she still summon rats?
She can't.
Oh.
But her power is...
But still, it's a good game?
Yeah. It's Corvo and do rats! But with Emily's powers, they are a lot more diverse in this, because in Dishonored 1, in both games, you can either do one of three playthroughs. You can do it...
Yeah.
Completely stealth, without killing anybody, just knocking people unconscious and everything like that, and hiding their bodies and things. Or you could play through it stealth murder and just killing people by seeing him. Or you can do the crazy trick shots, go around, just blindlessly murder everything in sight.
Mm-hmm.
Which at that point, I think is just the game's too easy.
It's like, look, everybody, I'm innocent. I just killed 300 people for you. I did not commit this one murder.
I killed all these other people. But that's the challenge with the game, is going through without getting detected or trying to do a pacifist run. You're not killing anybody. You're just choking them out. You're figuring out
what the
side quest
you
have to do. And some of those things, like, in order to... Every mission has a target. And so you're trying to go through a game without killing it, so you have to figure out what's the non-murder way to get rid of the guy.
Hmm.
Like, you need to remove him, but I don't want to kill him. Like, some things are really extreme. Like, in Dishonored 1...
Put a laxative in his drink.
Well, like, in Dishonored 1, you hire a guy, you make a deal with the leader of the gang,
yeah.
and he gets rid of the Pendleton brothers for you,
And what he does is he essentially is like, all right, they're taken care of. And it pops up on the screen that they're neutralized. And he goes, you know what I'm going to do with them? I'm going to take them, cut off their tongues, and stick them in one of their slave mines and have them work there for the rest of their lives. You're like, this is pretty severe. Like, maybe they just want to be killed. Like, maybe death just seems like the better option.
That's a good point.
But Emily's powers are really interesting. Dishonored 2, they really made it easier for the stealth pacifist. In Dishonored 1, it was really tough to go through without just killing people. Because there wasn't a whole lot of options. But they added, like, now you can drop, knock people out. Her powers can either be used to kill or to knock out. I mean, there's a lot of things that they really made it
easier. You can call them, pretend to be the cops, and say their wife was in a car wreck.
Yeah. Sure.
Your wife's gone into labor. I don't have a wife, but I'm going to go check this out.
Yeah, I must know what this is, then. The story was fun.
Pizza delivery for ICU Wiener.
I played through it once. No kill, Emily, which was a really good run. That was a lot of fun.
How long does a run take you?
One level. Well, first time playing it, I would do maybe a level a night.
Okay.
And when I say that, I mean in the course of 1 to 3 hours.
Okay. How many levels? Like, how many nights would it take you?
Took me over a week.
Okay. So you're looking at like a 14, 15 hour game? Maybe 20?
Around there.
That's pretty good.
I mean, there was essentially 8 or 9 levels. I can't remember how many. It's a good length because okay. If it was any longer than that, you're going to feel like, come on, let's just get this over with. Dear God, just end. But at the same time, you kind of feel like you're not doing much. Oh!
Handshake for everyone's maturity on that particular discussion.
Okay, we skipped that one. What happened?
There were two things
talking about the length of it.
Oh, I was thinking that too, but I was like, yeah, he's saying some shit.
There's two things I really wanted to mention and bring up in this really briefly are two levels. And
one is long and really hard.
They're both tricky, but they were fantastic. One level...
The other one's got a lot of girth. I mean, it's a big, surprisingly big level.
God damn it. You're trying to kill this inventor. He's creating this army of clockwork soldiers, these big machine guys, and they're a pain in the ass to deal with.
And it's thick and veiny.
But you go to his mansion...
What's so funny? Someone's going to have to explain to me off air.
You guys threw me off so much when I do my part. Like, I let you go through your thing, have an actual intelligent discussion.
That's
like
my base tactics
and shit about Wesley's games. Let's just talk about big, thick, veiny robot guys.
Let's be perfectly clear about something. Our conversation's not intelligent. We're just good at faking it. So please continue.
Yeah.
Please continue.
That's what your wife says to you every
day. Yes, thank you for that. The thing about you is that you have two people like us interrupting you the whole time. That's the only difference between our segments.
Yeah. But those that can handle the sound will find it extremely pleasurable.
So there's Jin Josh's level, where his entire mansion's got different levers and everything, and the floors and the rooms change. So you'll flip one lever, and just the whole layout will completely change. You'll hit this other lever, and the rooms will move around. So it's a really weird level to get your bearings with, because you got to figure out what floor you're on, and how do I need to change this room? Oh, this room just dropped, and there's guys here. I'm spotted. Fuck, and, you know. It's a really great level, but the best level I find is this one level where you're trying to figure out essentially why the main enemy is immortal. And so you're trying to, like, figure out why she's this way. So you go to this building that's supposed to have the secret. And this building is completely destroyed. It's desolate. There's nobody there but one guy. And he's, like sitting at a piano making random noises. He's essentially lost his mind. And you get this item that allows you... You can do two things with it. One, you can activate it so, like, these three little glass panels flip up and half your screen you see normally, and the other half you're looking through these glass panels and it's the same building but in the past.
Oh, that's funny.
And so there's people walking around and everything, and you can hold the button and actually shift into the past, and so you can teleport between those two time points. And so it's great because you're going to be in one part of it and there's these blood flies nests in the rundown future, and you have to deal with those and a couple of, like, these zombie things that are infested with blood flies. But then you can just
warp in time and walk through the hallway perfectly fine. You just gotta be careful of the guards. And at this point in the game, for this mission, you don't have any access to your power. So you're doing this completely with just your items and gear and everything. No powers to, like, jump across the room or to knock people out without you being near them and stuff. It's really tricky how you're doing this. And it's really interesting how... It's like any of those kind of time games where if you affect something in the past, it changes in the future. Like, at one part, there's a safe, but there's this, like, a statue in the way. So you go in the past, you can, like, knock the statue down. And so they can't move it, so they leave it. So the path's now open for you to go through in the future. Like, it's... You're manipulating things and also being careful where the guards are and using that manipulation as a way to get by guards and get by certain obstacles. It's a really good level, and it's very different for a Dishonored game to do.
I've often said time travel makes everything better.
Yeah.
You did do the nasty in the past,
didn't you? Until you become your own grandfather.
That past nastification shields you from the brainwaves.
But, you know, great game. Play it. It's fantastic.
Good. Mm-hmm. Ryan, you got one more?
I got one more game.
Let's do it.
And this is, I think, one you've been playing, too.
Oh, boy.
Overwatch.
Yes! What? Yeah. Well, what? You've been playing Overwatch?
Yeah. I got it around Christmas time. This is actually kind of crazy. I got it for myself around Christmas time.
Tell me, we will play.
I forgot I had it.
We will play! Text me like, hey, want to play some Overwatch tonight? I'd be like, fuck yeah, I'm already on.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I've been playing a shit ton of Overwatch lately.
Who do you like? Well, let's say, I mean, because I feel like a lot of it depends on what kind of mission I'm getting into. I usually try to be not the last person, but second to last. Basically, if there isn't a good healer, I go with a healer.
I always sit there and wait till, like, the team's pretty much picked out, and I can look at it and be like, all right, this is what we need. Do we need a damage guy? No. Do I need a healer? No. All right, I'll be the fucking tank. Like,
yeah.
It's great.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
let's say it's an attack mission.
Attack mission. If I have to tank, again, it depends on the map. As well for tanks.
Yeah.
I don't know. Who do you like to play? Let's go with that.
Okay, guys that I really like. I mean, if nobody's taken a healer, I enjoy being the healer. What's your face? The pure healer that basically either picks.
Mercy.
Yeah, I join the game, and whoever the tank is, I just trail them and I basically stick with them. I actually got. There's certain guys I don't like because I think they're cheap. So I did an entire run, and he got so. You could tell he didn't say anything, he didn't type anything, but he was fucking venting because I refused. To heal the Australian bomb planter guy. You know, the guy that has the big... I'm so bad with the names of the guys. He has the bomb.
Junkrat?
Junkrat.
Junkrat's like my main. I have the most hours on Junkrat.
I fucking love that guy. I really like Junkrat, but I think it's kind of cheap. So I intentionally just never healed the Junkrat. And like only healed the tank and everybody else around him. Because I knew he was like his ulti, where he basically turns into the thing and just...
Yeah.
It just bombs the front and tries to get
yeah.
the play of the game. I intend to just let him. I made sure that I used my ultimate to revive him. Only when he died. And he got so mad. It was great. And he would like intentionally, like, I'm still holding on. I'm still healing the tank. And he's like in front of me, like, in front of my eyesight, just going back and forth with this character, like, heal me, asshole, heal me. He's got like 10 HP. It's just like, oh, that made me so happy.
No, yeah.
So this is a cooperative experience, you're saying.
Yeah, it's where you meet friends.
You fuck with people. Sometimes.
Which, I mean, dear God, the
Overwatch my favorite community. Guy is probably Trobgor or whatever, the Torbjorn. Thank you.
Yeah, the guy who makes the turrets.
Because he provides this great function where his healing ability
See,
is
you're,
in the
you're,
armor.
You're a fucking tool already.
What, you don't like him?
No, I take that back.
Are you sure you guys want to play together? Because
if
you don't like his character...
You're the only Junkrat I'll heal.
Yay!
All
right. Torbjorn, you know, he makes the turrets and everything like that. He's just one of those guys where he gets to play the game, but then you rewatch the play of the game, and it's just him, like, jacking off in a corner while his turrets are mowing everybody down.
No, actually, well, I intentionally, I make sure that I'm constantly providing armor.
Okay, so you're being an active Torbjorn.
That I
yeah,
can support.
Totally. And
that
also,
I approve of. This
Warlord's
actually will go up and actually use their gun instead of just place a turret and just take a nap.
Like, but he's actually got he's got a lot of good damage. He can deal damage on his own. He is mobile. I just don't like it when teams overextend.
Mm. That happens all the time where it's like they get in their mind that, hey, they're, you know, it's a team of five or whatever and we gotta rush everybody all at once. And it's like, no, two of us held back and guarded the fucking post and then you guys rushed off and got yourselves killed. And it's not our fault. And then we get steamrolled because you guys couldn't stick together as a team and guard the point.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what bugs me. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I mean, I like a ton of characters, quite frankly. D.Va is a lot of fun to play.
I suck with D.Va. No matter how much time I put into D.Va, I cannot get good with her.
Yeah, I think the point is to be kind of passive with her. Mm-hmm. Make sure you're actually guarding, chipping, taking a beating the whole time. And odds are that Mercy is going to be your best friend. Mercy, mm-hmm. like, you know, whenever I play Mercy, I just find the strongest guy and stick with him.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Soldier's fun. I think it's great that they have Soldier there because he's like a B- at everything.
See, Soldiers and Genjis are why I don't feel bad playing Junkrat because they just dump on him.
Yeah.
It's like if I ever get into like a situation where I'm Junkrat, I'd be like, oh, they have a Pharah. Oh, they have a Soldier. Oh, they have a Genji. I'm dead.
Oh, Pharah. Pharah is tremendous fun. I really like playing with her a lot. She's not very good, but I like her.
Pharah's one of those characters. There are a few characters that you're either godlike with her or you're absolute garbage. There's never really a good middle ground.
You got that limited ammo, and it's really not that strong. It's sort of like you're playing Quake with a rocket launcher character. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's kind of seems like that's what the build's supposed to be about. I'm trying to think of all the fun ones. Jeez.
I'm sick of the McCree players who think they're amazing.
Like, yeah, I don't really like McCree all that much. Bastion's pretty cool. Bastion's kind of the same thing as Trobdor and a little bit like Junkrat, I think. Because these guys are all just like do a ton of damage.
Bastion is one of the no-skill guy. I'm going to find this corner, I'm going to put up my turret mode, and just shoot down this hallway. That's what I'm going to do.
I like a lot the woman that has the 10 turrets, the 10 mini turrets.
Symmetra.
Thank you. Yeah, Symmetra's pretty cool.
Symmetra. If you're ever playing Eichenwald, the castle.
Yeah.
Symmetra, if you're defending there, Symmetra, GG, you win. You just go to that first arch.
I know flood exactly the arch
and those two
about.
Hallways. Just put like three in the arch and then just put the other three in the two hallways and you're fine, GG. Like they're not getting by you.
Yeah. I don't know. If anything, I feel like sometimes it gets a little repetitive. I feel like people use the same character over and over again.
I'm really sick of people when you're playing maps like Ilios, the capture the hill maps,
mm-hmm.
where you're just capturing the points. You're not pushing a payload or anything like that. They're like, I need to play Widow here. I need to play Hanzo here.
Yeah,
somebody who's a far distance sniper who never actually gets on the point because they're just completely fucking useless on those maps.
That's true.
Everybody's like, we're attacking. I must Widow. Like I can.
I mean, if really sick of that. If that Widow is intentionally using their ultimate. To assist somebody else that is basically going to, like, nuke a small area and destroy a bunch of people, that's useful. But a Widow is a masturbatory thing to be. Like, it's so self-serving. Because you're really not definitely. You're not helping a team. You're really just worried about yourself.
Yeah, you want to get kills. That's all you want to do. Yeah. You're not really assisting anything.
Again, if you want to do that, Junkrat. Just be fucking Junkrat. I mean, I think Junkrat's a great killer. And it's also good for, like, shutting down paths. Like, let's say there's, you know, like an A, B, and a C path. It's good to, you know, put the trap down on one and then place the explosive on the other. So it's like, they're going to be like, oh, we'll avoid the trap here. But then you blast them against the wall or something when the team comes around the corner. Or it's like you launch them in the air and there's totally, the team is totally disoriented.
I launched Reinhardt the other day in the air with a bomb and he landed on my trap I placed. It was just the most godly thing I've ever seen. I just put my hands off of the keyboard and mouse for a second and went, holy hell, what just happened? Like, it was just hole in one. It was awesome.
Oh, yeah.
But if I'm playing a tank, I'm typically Reinhardt, which I've been playing a lot of Reinhardt lately.
Reinhardt is great. It just helps the team so much. It's a great team player move.
I was really surprised how good I've gotten with Reinhardt in the past few days. I used to be complete garbage with him, but he's a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
Except when you dash in and you have no team to support you.
That's true. Yeah, I just want to bring up a character list to make sure. Like, yeah, all these I really don't bother it with because, you know, like, Tracer, even though it's like the marquee character of the game, I don't really play Tracer.
Tracer fell off. She used to be really annoying, but now unless you're like a big season Tracer player, you're not really worth it. Just play Sombra, which could do the same thing but have a lot more utility to her.
Mm-hmm.
She's essentially a Tracer that can now hack people and be really useful to the team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anybody else on there?
Roadhog's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Really, everybody. It's just fantastic. It's a great...
Some I wish I could just spend a little more time getting good at. Because a lot of these, I just feel like I'm totally not playing the character right at all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but... Yeah, I think it takes hours and hours of gameplay with just any one of these guys to really feel comfortable with them.
Oh, one last note on my part, unless you want to say more on it. Yeah. But, fuck May.
Yeah.
Just fuck that chick. I think she's just completely broken.
and a giant pain in the ass.
Wait, who's May?
Oh, May is the chick with the ice gun.
Yeah,
I'm gonna sit here and freeze you so you can't do a thing, and then I'm gonna like wave at you and shoot you twice in the face. You're dead. Oh, I'm about to die. I'm gonna turn into a giant ice thing and live through and just laugh. Yeah. Oh, I'm gonna throw this giant AOE thing and freeze the attack. Fuck that chick.
Yeah, I mean, again, but that's also like low damage, pure crowd control.
But she is the most obnoxious thing in the world to deal with. I hate May.
Yeah, I hear that.
Well, good.
One of my favorite ways to play, actually, and one that I think should be incorporated a little more freely in the arcade mode, 3-on-3. 3-on-3 actually spices it up a little bit. It makes you play with a little bit more sense of severity, I guess you could say.
Like, yeah.
You need to play a little better with the team and know what your role is and pick a little better.
Mm-hmm.
And also pick complementarily, if that's a word, complementarily.
It is now.
Yeah, try to be the thing that the team needs the most. Don't worry about you or your stats, but just try to fill it in because your opponent's probably going to do a very good job of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Good.
Great game.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, I got one more. I've been playing through A Link Between Worlds, which is the Zelda game for the 3DS.
Mm-hmm.
I've been playing through it again in preparation for Breath of the Wild, which comes out in about 10 days. At time of recording here. Brand new Zelda game in 10 days. Yeah.
Oh, coming out on the Wii U?
Yeah, Wii U and Switch.
So what's the Switch coming out soon too, right?
Okay, so you guys, there's a new Nintendo console coming out. It's called the Switch.
What are you talking about?
Yeah, yeah.
That's a stupid name.
Is this like a sequel to the Genesis?
Sorry. Think of it as a Sega Nomad.
Uh-huh.
That doesn't tear through batteries quite as quickly. Almost as quickly.
Yeah, so it's like a mobile Jaguar.
Wait, is Game Freak on it?
Can you use Game Freak on it?
No.
Game Freak might be on it with Pokemon Stars.
Game Shark.
Game Shark.
Well, right. I got mixed up. You can use
Game
that.
Freak's the website.
For sure.
Yeah.
Game Freak is the developer of Pokemon.
Oh. No, Niantic is... Dummy. Niantic is the developer of Pokemon. Jeez. Joker.
I'm so confused at this point.
So new Nintendo console coming out in 10 days. Sure.
Yeah, well, I mean, we should say that we are going to address the Gen 2 update to Pokemon Go in the Pokemon show. I know we have...
We're behind that. Like, that's what's so shitty. We did a Pokemon podcast,
yeah.
And then, like, fucking 5 days later, they come out with
it. Well, the real funny thing was, in the Pokemon podcast, we're talking like, yeah, I mean... I hope they do something new with Pokemon Go pretty soon. And then, like, here is 80 more Pokemon. Go get them.
Yeah, here's your Umbreon. Try to quell that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like, 5 minutes after you said, hey, the new Pokemon are out. I'm like, all right, where's my Eevee? I just immediately pulled it out to do that and get my Umbreon.
And I was at work today. There were a bunch of people who had stopped playing Pokemon Go, had their phones out, like, talking about, like, oh, well, this guy. Like, yeah.
Yeah, I think the stat I heard was 40 million microtransactions occurred in the day that
Damn.
It was released.
Yeah, but I mean, we'll get into specifics on a different show. But A Link Between Worlds is like the most recent original, like, traditional adventure style Zelda game, and it came out in 2013, so we're, you know, almost 4 years removed. So Breath of the Wild comes out in about 10 days. So I'm almost done with A Link Between Worlds. I did a hero mode run, which is the hard mode. You take double damage and do half as much damage to enemies. So, it's beefed up the difficulty quite a bit. But, you know, A Link Between Worlds is structured differently from other traditional Zelda games. Because, you know, you would enter a dungeon, accumulate new weapons and new skills, which makes it the game... It gives you more skills to your disposal, so the game has to ramp the difficulty. So, A Link Between Worlds is structured differently because, rather than having the set order of dungeons, once you beat the initial two or three dungeons, it's... basically going to, like, your Dark was like, okay, there's seven more, go get them in any order. So you don't really have this ramping difficulty of enemies or bosses, because it can't presume that you have a certain sword or a certain number of hearts or a certain set of items at your disposal.
Sounds very Mega Man-y.
Yeah, it does have a certain Mega Man aspect to it. That's a good observation, because you don't have, like, the harder versions of the same enemy sprites, just encountering new areas. It's all basically the same enemies. Well, what they do to compensate for that is it gives you that whole, like, merge onto the wall mechanic. So you become a painting on a wall. You can kind of move around on the walls and through cracks and stuff. And that's really the crux of a lot of the puzzle solving within the game, which is cool because it's a really simple mechanic, but they find ways to keep it fresh. Like, I've probably talked about this. I haven't talked about this game since November 2013 when it came out. But there's a couple of cool little boss fights. There's this dude with a giant sword and shield, and what you have to do is you have to like merge onto his shield and become a painting. So he loses track of you and he's like looking around, and then when he's got his shield in a certain position, you have to pop out and then hack the shit out of him with your own sword.
Yeah.
Or there's another boss who will charge at you. He'll do a bull rush at you, like in Mega Man, like in half the bosses in Mega Man X3. And
so wait, this is just a new take on Link to the Past?
It is the same world map as Link to the Past. Wow. It's a sequel. And well, it's, you know, chronologically far into the future, but yeah,
and you've lost every item that you have found.
And you've lost every item. It's a different Link.
Okay.
But yeah, you're playing through the same world, but instead of going to Dark World, you're going to this other parallel world. You're not going into Dark World as it existed in A Link to the Past. When I was playing the game, I turned it on to Hero Mode to up the difficulty level, but because of that lack of a curve that I was just talking about, once you start to upgrade your sword and get more hearts, you're dying a lot less. Until I had like 8 hearts on the sword upgrade and a defense upgrade, I was dying quite often. I've probably died a couple dozen times within the game just because once you enter this game's version of Dark World, there are enemies who are doing 8 hearts worth of damage to you.
Yeah.
So yeah, bit of a pain in the butt, but it's pretty generous with the checkpoints, so that's nice.
Yeah. Well, I mean, before realizing that this is essentially another play on the Link to the Past world, at least the city. Like, that was the kind of thing that they always were good about, is ramping you up into the game, because it's sort of like you would pick up the bushes, and they're like, well, I want to pick up these other bricks. And it's like, no, you need to get the gloves or whatever. And
right.
It's like, there's other gloves to pick up bigger rocks, and there's other gloves to pick up this. Or it's like, you need flippers to do this. Or they always kind of like kept you in your lane.
And they
and
they
this
do,
one, they don't do that at all. They're just kind of like, here, fucking go nuts.
They do have that. But as opposed to like getting like the regular mitts to pick up the small blocks and like the giant mitts to pick up the big blocks, that doesn't funnel you in a certain direction as to like progress in the game. That just allows you to unlock more secrets, like money or heart pieces or these little creatures that you have to rescue, which allows you to upgrade your items, which is a unnecessary part of the game but helpful.
Cause so is this whole game just like a wink and a nod to like Link to the Past players?
Yeah.
Like, this is all the shit.
Yeah, because you have a lot of similar beats. Like, you go to the sanctuary first, and when you're doing, like, a lot of flipping back and forth between this game's version of Dark World and the regular world, and it helps you solve a lot of puzzles, especially in the overworld. Like, to get certain heart pieces, you have to enter Dark World in one area and then re-exit in another one, and, like, here, there's a heart piece waiting for you right there.
Yeah.
So, yeah. It's a cool take on that that overworld, and like everything is familiar. Like the layouts are almost identical. Like trees in almost the exact same spots, and the town is laid out almost exactly the same. So it's
did they reuse the same? Did they reuse the assets like the music, or do they get you get like more modern?
You get
recordings?
Updated. Yeah, you get updated versions of those music. Yeah,
that's really cool.
Yeah. I mean, even some of the enemy sprites are exactly the same. Well, not exactly the same. They're
chickens?
Yeah, you get the chickens.
Good.
You get like the Cyclops dudes that throw bombs at you. You get the mushrooms.
Oh,
the Octoroks.
Was it Octoroks? No, that's the water gas.
Those are Zoras, because in 2D Zeldas, Zoras are often evil. Even though there is a kingdom of Zoras in this game that is not hostile toward you.
Nerds.
Yeah.
Because they're nerds. But go on.
But Octoroks are like those octopus looking things that crawl
on
the ground.
Yeah.
They're not the Cyclops monsters.
More in the water in Majora's Mask.
Right, exactly. You gotta ram the boat into them.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, and a lot like Majora's Mask, like you're just saying, Wes, rather than having, because they give you, like, free reign, go anywhere, make your way there, as long as you have the appropriate item to get there, which you can just buy, you'll be able to get there. So rather than setting you on this set path, it's just open. So what they do is, they have, like, these Majora's Mask-esque little mini-puzzles or mini-adventure-type areas outside the dungeon. Because the Majora's Mask, like, once you enter, like, the swamp or the canyon or the Great Bay, it's almost like a expansive dungeon with simple solutions. It's not as condensed or as dense as a regular dungeon, but there are a certain set order of things that you have to do in order to access the proper dungeon.
So you basically get this mini dungeon at the beginning of a regular dungeon in Majora's Mask and in this. It's a little bit lighter than it would be.
So this is the world map, essentially? Or is this like the overworld and then you go...
Yeah, that's the overworld of this game's version of Dark Souls. You even got the Lost Woods with the Master Sword in it.
No, yeah. This looks fantastic.
Oh, wow.
I'll load it to you when I'm done, because I'm almost done with
it. Well, you said this game is like 4 years old now?
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah, it came out...
Yeah, and it's still like $40.
Well, yeah,
I've seen that. That's just...
Nintendo games never drop in price. I bet you.
I'm so poor, though.
I bet you.
We've talked about the Super Nintendo. The games have gone up in price.
And those are even for used versions. But, like, I bet you, if you were able to find a brand new version of Super Smash Bros. Melee on GameCube, I bet you'd be $30.
Really?
Yeah. Jeez. Yeah.
That's weird.
Even though that game went player's choice, like most player's choice games dropped to $19.99, that one still stayed $29.99. Because fuck you, you're going to buy it anyway. But yeah, A Link Between Worlds, I'm really liking it. A worthwhile strategy, because I guess I can get into some real basic stuff here. So once you pass the first couple dungeons of the game, you have this shop. Basically, this guy takes over your house. Mm-hmm. The same house that you have in A Link to the Past. And he turns it into a store. And within that store, you can buy any item you want. The bow, the bombs, the boomerang, fire rod, ice rod. Mm-hmm. Any of that stuff is just immediately accessible. And you can rent it. And renting is like 50 rupees. It's not very much. But when you die, you lose it. Or you can buy it permanently, which is significantly more. Like 800 rupees, 1200 for certain items. But then when you die, you always have it. So because I was playing hero mode, I always opted to farm some rupees and just buy it. And there's pretty simple ways to farm rupees. Like, there's a spot within the town where, pretty early on, you get a net and an empty bottle. You also get a lantern pretty early on, which is a nice nod to A Link to the Past as well. You get a net and a empty bottle, and there's a place in town where you can hack up these bushes or tall grass, and a bee comes out. And when you catch a bee, you just go to a house and you can sell it to a guy for 50 rupees. It's pretty easy to farm some cash in a couple of minutes.
That way. Like, thank God, this thing won't kill me.
Right. The really awesome thing, though, is there's a slim percent chance, I think it's like 1 in 30, maybe 1 in 60, that the bee will be a golden bee. Mm-hmm. And when you get a golden bee, he'll buy it for like 200 rupees, and then he'll also give you a medallion. And bees, when they normally pop out of bushes, if they get near you, they'll try to sting you. They'll attack you. Mm-hmm. If you have this bee medallion, the bees will be on your side. So they will follow you around. Nice. And if you encounter enemies, the bees will just start swarming and attacking the enemies.
That's amazing.
There's some pretty cool videos of someone bringing bees into the final boss fight. And just like, because you get 5 empty bottles, you just unleash 5 bees into the final boss fight and let them wreak havoc.
Well, I used to do that all the time in Link to the Past. Just to kind of fuck around.
Yeah.
Like, I would just be in a boss fight or something and I would just throw
bees in a boss fight.
Just let them do that.
Thank you. let them wreak havoc. It's fun.
Yeah. It's kind of cute.
But yeah, I mean, I'm having a lot of fun with this run through. I have one dungeon left to go, and then the final dungeon, then I'll be done with it. I'm not sure if I'll go for the 100%. I did get 100% run through. Maybe I will. I think I need like 8 more heart pieces of a heart to technically get that 100% run through. But we'll see. See how my mood strikes me. I do want to finish up a few games before the Switch comes out, because that'll be just drowning in Breath of the Wild. Mm-hmm. For the rest of my life. It's been nice knowing you guys.
Yeah, it's been great.
You do know on my days off, I'm going to have to like show up early. Like, no, you don't get to play today. I'm playing this now. Until I get my own.
It's totally fine. It's fine.
So, I mean,
I'm down for that.
I'm cutting into your game time.
The game's...
I start my own Breath of the Wild run. And...
The game's going to be big enough for the two of us. We can even play off the same file. That game's going to be huge.
You get home from a long day at work, you open the door.
I'm there in nothing but my underwear. Just like, oh, God.
Like, didn't we take your house key? And they'd be like, I know you don't lock that other door over there. I'm like, yes, that's correct. I don't lock that
door. Well, yeah, because you broke the window.
All right. But yeah, that's all I have to say about A Link Between Worlds this time. Do you guys want to talk about X-Men?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, so we'll take a quick break and then we'll talk about X-Men. Hey everyone, John here. The last 45 minutes or so of this episode where we were talking about X-Men comics for a while got lost in the shuffle of audio files going around. So unfortunately, we won't be talking about comics this week. But I was talking with a friend of mine who might join us on a show in the month of March to talk a lot about the X-Men and X-Men comics. So something else to look forward to. But I'm going to bring this show to an unceremonious close by myself here. Next up is going to be the official show, in which we're going to be talking about a lot of different Switch topics and Switch launch games and previewing all that. So that'll be a good time. Till next time, everybody.